This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, the weekend edition of Family Research Council's Washington Watch.
Hello and welcome to the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. I'm David Salkeld, and here at the top of the show, I just want to say that our thoughts and prayers go out to the victims and their families that were involved in the terrible violence that occurred earlier this week. Our hearts hurt with yours. Later on in today's program, we're going to be talking about the FBI's findings regarding Hillary Clinton and her private email server. But first, the latest attack on religious liberty is coming from the Hawkeye State. A brochure published by the Iowa Civil Rights Commission is laying out the case that places of public accommodation, like churches, must comply with the state's bathroom laws, which allow men to use women's restroom facilities. First Liberty Institute's Chief of Staff, Chelsea Yeoman, joined guest host Ken Klukowski with the latest on Thursday.
Chelsea, welcome to Washington Watch.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Ken. I'm excited to be here with you today.
Now, you just returned from Iowa. You were in the Hawkeye State dealing with this situation on the phone. I know you had a big press conference there. I'm debating how much to set this up or just to let you go at it. Let me just tell our guests that there is the state of Iowa has several years ago adopted a SOGI, a sexual orientation and gender identity law, that they added to their state's general anti-discrimination statute. You know, that's the state law that says you can't discriminate against people because of their race, their skin color, and that they've added to that, putting on the same level as racial discrimination, saying that that you can't make decisions about a person pertaining to their sexuality or pertaining to what gender they claim to identify with on any given day. And in just a few months ago, the Iowa Civil Rights Commission, which is the executive body principally responsible for administering this statute, they put out an informational brochure. And in that brochure, they asked themselves in print whether churches are exempt from this state SOGI. And they came back saying sometimes, and then said that there were some instances where they are, but others where they are not. Now, I want to turn to Chelsea with that and just say this. I think people listening to that, they have to be saying, okay, maybe I misheard him. That can't be right. Because if they heard it right, their head's about to explode. So why don't you go ahead and lay it out for us?
Right. That is exactly right, Ken. So what we have here is an unprecedented mandate. Out of all of the First Amendment litigation we do here at First Liberty, we have never before seen a state government issue a mandate saying if a church even so much as opens its doors to the public for a worship service, so just the general Sunday morning worship service, it's officially classified as a public accommodation. Now, what that means, not to be too technical here, is two things. For every church that opens its doors to the public on a Sunday morning, they have to allow transgender males to use female restrooms. So they're mandating the operations of an internal church body, the restroom usage of that church body. In fact, one of the examples in the brochure itself says that this you're subject to this if you have a child care facility. So, you know, if your children go to a Sunday school or have their own separate children's services, this would apply in that context as well.
And one would expect that there would be children in childcare.
Absolutely. Absolutely, Ken. I mean, this is just an egregious overstep of the state government.
So in other words, Bob Smith comes along and says, you know, I identify as a woman. I'm going to wear some women's clothing. You have to call me Barbara. You have to call me ma'am. You have to refer to me as a she. And then when I'm going to use the restroom, I can go ahead and walk into that women's restroom where the girls from childcare might be using the restroom at that same time.
Yes, Ken, that's exactly what the state of Iowa is mandating. But it goes further than just privacy rights or safety rights. This is the first time a church has been mandated to do this. And as you know, most of us are aware many, many faiths and religions have sincerely held religious beliefs on human sexuality and on gender roles. This would apply to a mosque. Many mosques have their services segregated with males on one side and biological females on the other. They would be at odds with the statute. They would be able to undergo prosecution just like our client and this church would. So make no mistake, this is broader than just, you know, evangelical Christian churches even. It would apply to any type of faith that has views on human sexuality that might even be millennia-old religious beliefs.
My goodness. Okay, so tell me what action took place this week.
Right. Well, what we did, and let me unpack, there was a 1 second part of this mandate I wanted to make sure to hit on because I don't think this could be overstated enough. The second part of the mandate requires churches to not speak or preach or teach in a manner that would be considered offensive to someone or make someone feel unwelcome on matters of gender identity and sexuality. The main focal point and concern for us is that the fact that a church has a doctrine written down about their biblical views of marriage means that that church can undergo prosecution.
Ladies and gentlemen across the country, I hope you are listening to this. 5 years ago, not only was this inconceivable 5 years ago, but when religious liberty lawyers said, when these laws were being passed, would say, you know, you could actually use this to go after churches the way you've written it. The liberal left pushed back. They said, oh, you're scaremongering. Oh, that's a boogeyman argument. Oh, that's crazy. You're just trying to stoke up fear. And what, folks, it's happening right now, right here, right now. They are flat out saying, government officials are saying, are churches exempt from this? And they come back and say, sometimes. And then when you're not exempt, whoa, okay, what kind of things are we not exempt from? When you open your doors for Sunday service, that's when you are subject to prosecution if you do not go along with the LGBT agenda that is conflicting with your religious liberty. This is as real as it gets. Chelsea, so what happened today in light of this? And again, if your hair is not on fire, then you really haven't been listening to this, because this impacts the very heart of the First Amendment, and it goes right to the core of your religious liberty. No matter where you stand on this issue, none of us want to live in a country where the government can come after a church that refuses to abandon biblical teaching or church doctrine on questions about what human beings are all about, and that they can't even preach that stuff from the pulpit. Okay, Chelsea, so what happened this week?
Yes, Ken, this is absolutely a wake-up call to churches and Christians everywhere in America. So we decided to send a demand letter to the Iowa Civil Rights Commission and essentially demand that they provide our client Cornerstone. It's Cornerstone World Outreach is our client. Pastor Kerry Gordon is the pastor there. Demanded that the CRC provide our client an exemption, saying that they are not subject to this public accommodations mandate, and furthermore, that the CRC will not be enforcing this against churches. It's the best case scenario we can imagine is that the CRC comes to its senses and does the right thing in the next 30 days and decides to afford this exemption.
And so we're giving them 30 days, and then if they do not come out with a, so I take it this is something where we're looking for a response here in terms of saying, I mean, something flat, clear, and unequivocal that you are not in danger under this. If we don't get that kind of response, what's the next step? We've got 40 seconds.
They can avoid liability by saying we won't infringe on your First Amendment rights, but if they don't, We're prepared to take this to all the way to the courts and litigate this in order to protect the churches and Christians of the state of Iowa.
This is just stunning, folks. I mean, we're talking here. There are multiple First Amendment rights here. I mean, it's not just the free exercise of religion. It's free speech. There are things that they're saying you cannot say. There are things that they're saying you have to say. If that's a man and he calls himself a woman, you have to call himself a woman. This is just amazing. It's absolutely stunning. We've been with Chelsea Uman with First Liberty Institute. Check out more about the incredible facts of this case at firstliberty.org.
You can find out more about Chelsea Yuman when you visit TonyPerkins.com. When we return, we'll hear from former ambassador and FRC's own Ken Blackwell on FBI Director Jim Comey's press conference. Don't go away. We'll be right back with more of the weekend edition of Washington Watch.
What's at stake at this election? A lot. From the freedom to publicly practice and proclaim your faith to the nomination of Supreme Court justices, matters of critical importance to Christians are looming in the days ahead. That's why we invite you to join us on September 9th through 11th in Washington, D.C. for the Values Voters Summit. Come to learn, be encouraged, and meet others who will stand for the renewal of this great nation. Visit valuesvotersummit.org for more information.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. On Wednesday, FBI Director Jim Comey laid out the Bureau's case for why they will not recommend charges be brought against former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton. In a press conference, Comey discussed the evidence against Secretary Clinton, but in the end, at least at this point, justice will not be served. On Wednesday, FRC's Senior Fellow for Human Rights and Constitutional Governance and former Undersecretary at the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, Ken Blackwell, joined guest host Ken Klukowski with his analysis.
Ken Blackwell, Mr. Ambassador, thank you for joining us.
Hey, Ken. Good to be with you, sir.
This has been an incredible week. I mean, it's, you know, as I've been writing for Breitbart trying to cover some various issues, it's been hard to break through on some things because the breaking news has been so red hot that it's like, you got to be talking about that. And so I ended up writing on Hillary over these past couple days. It's sometimes the truth is stranger than fiction. And I would love to know your thoughts. Of course, yesterday, we saw FBI Director Jim Comey give a press conference in which he laid out a litany of failings on the part of Hillary Clinton and her top aides. He characterized her handling of classified information as extremely careless. He told the American people that over 100 of her emails, contrary to what she told the American people repeated times, that over 100 emails contained classified information that was classified at the time it was sent or received, and that over a half dozen of those were marked, contrary to a separate promise she gave, were marked in the email as being classified information, yet then went on to say that he's not recommending any criminal prosecution. I would love your thoughts on that.
Well, the case that he made was more than just casual. It was the evidence, the circumstantial evidence was, in the words of Rudy Giuliani, overwhelming. And then for him to not announce that he was going to recommend that this case be acted upon by the Attorney General was mind-numbing. Ken, we're in the middle of a national collapse of trust. We're in a crisis of confidence in terms of how the American people view the competence of its government, and then to have a case be made by the Attorney General that basically laid out that there was a substantial piece of circumstantial evidence was the fact that she had destructed, you know, she in fact oversaw the destruction of 34,000 emails. And for the head of the FBI to say that he could not, in fact, in good faith, make a recommendation that this case be pursued by the Attorney General, as I said, was mind-numbing. And it furthered, I think, the crisis of confidence that a growing number of people, you know, now are experiencing when it comes to trusting government leaders and the direction of our government.
A collapse of confidence. That is an explosive phrase. The idea, not just that you're not talking about declining confidence. You're talking about a collapse of confidence. And you raised, well, we could do a whole show just on that. But one thing you just said right there, I want to unpack, because I agree with you. People's heads should be exploding as they're listening to this, is the idea that the director of the FBI, now Hillary Clinton promised us, she promised us repeatedly and did so in a snide little way that her supporters were saying, hey, if you think there's any substance to this investigation, this is all just a waste of time. This is a waste of money. This is all just a joke. It's a witch hunt. Well, the nonpartisan investigators at the FBI put out a whole laundry list of stuff. And as part of that, as you just said, she had promised us that those 30-some thousand emails that she deleted, oh, don't worry, those were all personal stuff. That was about Chelsea's wedding and about yoga classes. I know it was a big wedding, but it wasn't a wedding that deserved, you know, five figures in emails coming from the bride's mom. I mean, it's that should alarm the American people at the thought of a person like that becoming president, if in fact that's what it was all about. But Jim Comey told the country that they had recovered from other sources, like other government accounts, people who had received some of these emails, that many of the emails she destroyed in those 34,000 were in fact government emails. Now, we have a whole separate law here, the Federal Records Act. It is a crime to destroy government documents. What in the world? Why are we not? We have evidence to show they've recovered these emails, and we know that she had deleted them. Why are we not seeing a prosecution on those destroyed records?
Let me give you some context, Ken. For 3 years, I worked at the State Department. For 3 years, I had top secret clearance. For 3 years, I understood.
I'd rather you have that clearance than Hillary Clinton have that clearance. I'm pretty concerned about how she handles documents now.
For 3 years, I understood the weight of the responsibility on my shoulders and in my hands when I handled that top secret information. What the FBI director did yesterday was actually made it much more difficult for us as a country to hold people with top secret clearance to a high bar of responsibility. He has made it difficult to charge anybody in the CIA or the FBI that is extremely careless with top secret information. He's made it impossible to charge them in the future if he in fact will not charge Hillary Clinton after he made a compelling case.
Well, in fact, let's pull out one element of that. Folks, when we're talking about mishandling classified information, the federal statute that governs that is codified at 18 U.S.C. Section 793. Okay, so that's Title 18 of the United States Code, the criminal part of the U.S. Code, Section 793. Now, I don't want to go all law geek on this, though you know I've taught law and it's kind of in my blood to do that. But I mean, there are eight paragraphs in that statute, folks, as to how you can be committing that felony of mishandling classified information. Some of them say that you willfully or intentionally did this or that. Others say that you knowingly did this or that. But if you look at 793, paragraph F. If you take documents from the classified documents pertaining to national security, if you remove them from a secure environment and fail to properly store them, if you do so with gross negligence, you don't have to know you're doing it. You don't have to intend you're doing it. If it just happens that now that material is outside a secure environment due to your gross negligence, your recklessness, that is in and of itself a felony. Jim Comey said that Hillary Clinton was extremely careless in how she dealt with these documents. That is a synonym in the law to gross negligence. If we're not going to enforce that paragraph, Ken Blackwell, if we're not going to enforce 793F, then maybe it should. Maybe Congress needs to change the law and remove it. I mean, if they're not doing prosecutions under that, then why the heck is it sitting there in the statute?
Well, absolutely. And that's the point that I was trying to make. Look, it is drilled into our diplomats. It is drilled into our top military personnel that they are entrusted with lawful possession of information relating to national defense and national security, and to permit it, to permit that information through gross negligence to be removed from its proper place of custody and or disclosed, that is excellent, pure and simple.
You can find out more about Ken Blackwell when you visit TonyPerkins.com. When we return, Joel Pollack from Breitbart News joins us to talk about the House Oversight Committee's hearing with FBI Director Jim Comey. Don't go away. We'll be right back with more of the weekend edition of Washington Watch. The family is the heart of our economy. It is the greatest generator of knowledge, attitudes, skills, and habits of the individual. The vast majority of small businesses begin as family businesses, which eventually become the large businesses of the nation. Family Research Council believes that federal policymakers should take action to help moms and dads better provide for their children through tax reform. To learn more about our family-friendly tax proposals, visit frc.org/taxes. Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. On Thursday, the House Oversight and Government Reform Committee held a hearing with FBI Director Jim Comey to discuss the reasoning behind why the Bureau decided not to bring criminal charges against former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton. After being pressed on several disparities in the FBI's case, things got heated. Senior Editor-at-Large at Breitbart News, Joel Pollack, joined guest host Ken Klukowski with the latest.
Joel, today, Jim Comey, before the U.S. House, hours of testimony, everyone was watching. Of course, we had Congressman Jim Jordan on this program yesterday. We had you on yesterday, teeing all this up. Tell us what the takeaway is.
I think the takeaway is that Comey's argument that there was not sufficient intent to prosecute has basically fallen apart. And it's fallen apart in two ways. I think the most significant was Trey Gowdy's questioning when he pointed out that as a prosecutor, you almost never have direct evidence of intent where someone says, hey, I intend to break the law, but you almost always have circumstantial evidence. And Gowdy walked through the circumstantial evidence in this case, and it is overwhelming. And that was very effective. He also made the point that Comey and the FBI had read intent into a statute where it doesn't exist, and not only that, but they had read specific intent instead of general intent. Now, for the lawyers who are listening, this is review, but there are crimes of specific intent and crimes of general intent, and what Comey seemed to be saying is that they can't prosecute Clinton unless she had the specific intent to harm the United States. That's pretty much the highest standard you can get to in a crime like this, and one could make an argument, I suppose, that based on past case history, which is the argument Comey made, they don't prosecute people for this crime unless they intend, or unless they have intent, even though the intent isn't in the statute, it's just a statute of gross negligence. But Comey really kicked it up a level. He seemed to be bending over backwards to find reasons not to prosecute Hillary Clinton. So that was the first thing. But then Committee Chairman Jason Chaffetz from Utah had a withering line of questioning toward the end, where he asked Comey repeatedly, did Hillary Clinton give access to classified information to people who did not have clearance to receive it? Now, Comey tried to argue that she didn't do so intentionally, but he had to say, yes, she did actually give classified information to people, whether it was the administrators of her private email server or her lawyers, that did not have security clearance and could have been viewing classified emails or information. But he had no answer, and Chaffetz really ran through him on that. And Chaffetz said, well, I don't understand how you're not prosecuting her. She intended to give this information to people. She intended, particularly the lawyers, because by the time that came around, she had reason to know that there was suspicion of classified information among her emails. She gave them these emails. They were not authorized to see them or view them. Comey wasn't sure whether they had read them or not, but certainly she claimed they had read them. So after that, it was really just, there was very little left of Comey's.
Yeah, that's huge. That's explosive. Did they get into, because I actually haven't checked it myself. Again, let's you and I go law geek for 10 seconds here. I mean, did they talk about the mens rea component for sharing classified information? Folks out there, everyone, that means the mental state that you're in when you're committing a crime. I mean, is it that you have to intentionally share classified information with the person without clearance, or is it knowing, or are we, again, to negligence or gross negligence there?
There was some discussion of that standard and that requirement early on, and Comey tried to say she didn't have the idea of knowingly transferring classified information. But later on, it just fell apart. They didn't really revisit that. The Republicans really pressed the idea that there had to have been knowledge, that there was classified information on these emails. And again, you couldn't have direct intention of it was hard to provide direct evidence of intent, but as a prosecutor, Gowdy said, he had certainly prosecuted people who didn't know what they were doing was illegal, but did it anyway. It's not that they had to know that even, he said, I've prosecuted a lot of dumb people, even people who didn't know you couldn't kill another person.
Right, and that's where I appreciate having Gowdy on this. As a former U.S. attorney, having a prosecutor there, I mean, we've only got 20 seconds here, but I'm glad that they're drilling down on this. In 10 seconds, what do you see coming up next, or do you think this is the end?
The big takeaway is the House is going to refer Clinton for investigation for perjury, and that came out at the beginning of the hearing, exactly the point that you raised with Representative Jordan yesterday, so that's big news.
Well, you can find out more about today's guests when you go to TonyPerkins.com. Also, while you're there, sign up for Tony's Washington Update. It's a daily email highlighting the important issues affecting your faith, family, and freedom. Well, that's it for this week's show. I'm David Salkiel, thanking you for being with us, and I encourage you to be back here next week for the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
The weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you've heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can help support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 866-372-7234.